Welcome to another episode of Bulls Gold, episode 55 on September 29, 2019. I'm Edward Schuler, joined as always by Salim Sudawala. Salim, how's it going today, man?
It's good, man. Having a good weekend. You know, obviously other teams have started their media day, but the Bulls is tomorrow, so you know, looking forward to that. But pretty well overall. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really well. As you mentioned, the Bulls media day is tomorrow, so there's going to be a lot of news, hopefully positive news, coming out of Chicago tomorrow. And one of the storylines that I think people are going to be focusing on is the point guard situation for the Chicago Bulls. And as you know, we signed Tomas Satoransky, or acquired him in a sign-and-trade with the Washington Wizards. And Tomas Satoransky is widely considered to be the favorite for the Bulls' starting point guard job, at least in terms of what everyone believes in the offseason. And to help us talk a little bit about Tomas Satoransky, we have from NBC Sports Washington, who covers the Washington Wizards, Chase Hughes. Chase, how's it going today, man?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Thanks for joining us, man.
Appreciate you coming on for sure.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so let's start with this. Tomas Satoransky was acquired from the Bulls in a sign and trade with Washington, I believe, just for a couple of second round picks. And looking at the Wizards roster, it's with John Wall out, and you know, they signed Isaiah Thomas, I believe, in free agency. And, you know, Satoransky's been pretty solid, a solid piece for the Wizards the last few years. And he's making a reasonable amount of money this year, I believe, on a three-year deal, even though the third year is partially guaranteed. So let's start with this. Why ultimately did the Wizards elect to not keep Tomas Satoransky? Was it something on Satoransky's side, or was it just a decision from the front office? So, you know, ultimately, why is he a member of the Bulls now instead of the Wizards?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. I think the priorities for the Wizards changed, of course, over the months in the spring and the summer, and they realized that they needed to create some long-term financial flexibility and let some of their veterans walk in free agency. So I think he was part of that decision-making process. And then also, as a restricted free agent, you know, Satoransky really wanted a fresh start, and he expressed that to the Wizards. So they decided not to match the money and let him go to Chicago. All in all, it was honestly one of the more surprising parts of the Wizards offseason, because with John Wall out for most of the year, and maybe potentially all of the year, he thought they really needed to shore up that point guard spot. And Satoransky, in my opinion, you know, may not be an above-average starting point guard, but he's a starting point guard, and they let him go and instead signed Isaiah Thomas, who played 12 games last year due to injury, and Ish Smith, who didn't start a game last year for the Detroit Pistons. So I think there were a lot of fans that saw that situation and were wondering why they let Satoransky go. He had become a fan favorite, and I think everyone realized that the Wizards could help him, but they didn't really have the money to justify keeping him, I think, also at that price. You know, they've got one of the worst contracts in basketball on their roster, and Jan Mahimi, who's in the final year of a four-year, $64 million deal. And you have to wonder, you know, if that money wasn't on the books, could they have brought a Satoransky back or someone like that? But, you know, it sounds to me like Satoransky wanted the fresh start himself.
You know, one of the things when I look at his game, especially when he played next to Bradley Beal, Satoransky himself is a very low usage player. And a lot of times Bradley Beal, you know, handled the ball early and often. And I see that dynamic fitting in pretty well with Zach LaVine. Can you expand a little bit in regards to that? And how do you see him fitting with maybe Zach LaVine? And was that role similar, do you think, as how he fit with Bradley Beal?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question, because that was kind of a battle between Satoransky and the coaching staff for several years. You know, he always saw himself as a point guard because he played as a point guard at a really high level in Europe. And the Wizards wanted him to be able to play more off the ball as a two guard and as a three. And at first, Satoransky was pretty reluctant to do that because, like I said, he always saw himself as a point guard. But he ended up being more accepting of that. And I think the reasons why the coaching staff wanted him to play off the ball were pretty clear. You know, he's good on catch and goes. He's a much better shooter when he's not off the dribble. You know, if you look at some of his advanced shooting stats on NBA.com, you know, going back several years, you know, for the first 2 years in his career, I don't think he made a single shot off more than one dribble. So he's kind of a catch and shoot guy, but has at least from three, he has an accurate 3-point shot. It's just he kind of needs his feet set. But we saw him improve playing off the ball because he can do that. And, you know, he's a versatile defensive player. I think that's what the Wizards might be missing the most from him, because they're going to Ish Smith and Isaiah Thomas. And Thomas Adoransky, with his size and his anticipation, was a pretty good team defensive player. Definitely kind of played within the system and did a good job of that. So I did see some flashes with him and Bradley Beal, you know, him playing off the ball. But I also would honestly say that I don't think the Wizards ever really found the perfect role for Satoransky. You know, after his first year, Trey Burke ended up becoming really good in New York, right? And when he was here, he was the point guard and Satoransky was kind of the two. But I think in hindsight, everyone who evaluated that team realized that the Wizards probably should have reversed it and had the ball in Satoransky's hand and Trey Burke playing off the ball, because he ended up, you know, kind of resurrecting his career by doing that. So that's why Satoransky's tenure in Washington is so interesting, because I think people wonder if there's unfulfilled potential and whether he was ever actually used correctly.
So, you know, on that same note, then, do you actually believe there's unfulfilled potential with Satoransky? Is he capable of taking on a more high volume role in an NBA offense? Because, you know, we've seen players, you know, be very efficient and be very impactful on, you know, very low to moderate, you know, usage on teams as kind of a role player. Not to say that we think Satoransky is going to become, you know, an all-star or something at, you know, a higher volume, but do you think he's able to fulfill a much more like higher volume role and still be as impactful as a starting point guard in the NBA?
I think so. Although, you know, he did get pretty heavy minutes with John Wall being out. And I think to me, what he proved with that extended opportunity is that he is a starting caliber point guard. I think over time we'll see, you know, how good of a starting caliber point guard, and obviously how often he can kind of stave off Coby White and some of the other guards they have on that roster for getting minutes. But I don't know if he's ever going to be a high volume scorer. But you know, the one thing that I think he only scratched the surface of his potential with is finishing at the rim. He's an extremely good athlete. Like if he jumps off of his left leg, he gets a lot more bounce off his left leg. He can throw down some pretty serious poster dunks. I mean, he had, you know, probably one of the best vertical leaps on the Wizards. It's just that he rarely got to show that in a game. So the teammates would always joke, they would call him a practice dunker. but only like twice did he actually show it in a game. Once was against, the Houston Rockets in a game that he kind of went viral for the first time. But that's one thing that I would look out for. Like, you know, can he expand his game finishing at the rim? And then also, you know, I think shooting threes at volume, because he's been able to shoot them efficiently, just not with volume.
Yeah, you know, you brought up some good, like as far as him finishing at the rim, something in the FIBA tournament I noticed he was, you know, attacking the rim a lot. Was his play this year in the tournament different from in the years past when he's played with the Czech Republic team? Because I don't know if he maybe was extra motivated going into, you know, free agent signing with a new team, and maybe he played out, or is this something he's done before?
Well, you know, it's always an interesting dynamic when he goes and plays for his national team, because he's the guy there. And, you know, I think that when that would happen with the Wizards, he would come in a little bit more confident. So I think you're probably just seeing that continuing to scale up, him continuing to be more confident. And, you know, as the guy running the offense, because he's had kind of an interesting trajectory in his career where he's turned pro, I think, at 15 years old. And by the time he was 18, 19, he was, you know, an important guy on a good team in Europe. And when he got to Washington, he had to adjust with being, you know, sometimes the third point guard, sometimes what looked like being the fourth point guard. You know, 2 years ago, before the Wizards started the playoffs against the Toronto Raptors in the first round, they went out and signed Ty Lawson from China. And that was basically so that they didn't have to play Tom Satoransky, or that they could play him off the ball. And that was just kind of a microcosm that a lot of Wizards fans cite about his tenure here, that even that season when John Wall was hurt and it seemed like Satoransky acquitted himself really well, there was still this like moment and movement at the end of the season to replace him. And I think it was something that motivated him a lot. After that event, I think it made him wonder if he was ever going to earn the trust of the coaching staff. And it to a certain extent, kind of changed that relationship.
So what do you think about Satoransky's, you know, intangibles in terms of not just, you know, on the court, but, you know, off the court, like in terms of the Wizards locker room, was he always viewed as someone that was, you know, a positive voice or positive figure in the locker room? Was he well liked by teammates? You know, I saw a few paragraphs. I can't remember where it was, but it talked about the relationship that he had with Scott Brooks and how, you know, Tomas Satoransky was always just kind of like he was very aggressive in terms of, you know, almost an aggressive confidence, I guess, so to say. Like he's very sure of himself. You know, he plays hard. He seemed to be the type of player that, you know, coaches are really can really be drawn to, and especially a guy like Jim Boylan, who's very, you know, aggressive himself. So, you know, can you tell me a little bit about what Bulls fans can expect, not only like intangible wise from Satoransky on the court, but, you know, how he can mix with this, you know, young locker room that a lot of Bulls fans are hoping is going to, you know, really turn the corner in the upcoming season?
His intangibles are great. You know, I think he was the type of guy that even in some of their worst moments sort of played the game the right way, gave an honest effort on defense. You know, couldn't necessarily say that about all of his teammates. And you know, I remember last year, early in the season, it was, you know, one of those moments that I've grown accustomed to with the Wizards where expectations are high, things are going wrong, and guys have to explain what's going wrong. And I remember Austin Rivers, and I think Bradley Beal might have said the same thing. They were like, yeah, Tomas Satoransky's not the problem. Like, if anything, most of us need to play like Tomas Satoransky. So I think he ended up becoming kind of an example of what the Wizards wanted to do more of. They just couldn't do more of because they didn't necessarily have the personnel. The one thing I would say is that, you know, when he didn't get minutes early on in his career, he definitely kind of made it known. But I think that was probably a learning lesson for him. And now, you know, he's probably more accustomed to what it takes to earn minutes at the NBA level. So we'll see how he does with Jim Boylan. But I think as long as he's getting minutes and getting what he feels like is a proper opportunity, then he's generally a pretty happy camper. And, you know, in terms of hard work and intangibles and leadership, he definitely passes that test for sure.
So, you know, one of the Bulls' weakest links right now heading into the season is a depth at the wing behind Otto Porter Jr. Do you think, I don't know, you mentioned Satoransky playing in the wing at a three spot at times. Do you think he could fill in behind Otto for a longer period of time if by chance one of the other options for the Bulls does not work out as far as Chandler Hutchinson or Denzel Valentine is concerned?
I think he can. You know, like I said, he's been put in that spot before and hasn't necessarily been a big fan of it. He prefers to be a point guard. He just considers himself to be a point guard, but he's definitely shown improvement playing off the ball in recent years. And I remember last year I sat down and talked to him, and you know, he was saying how he was buying into being more versatile because he understood that it makes him more valuable as a player. So I think there's definitely a chance. You know, I think if he does play off the ball, it probably makes more sense to play him as kind of a point forward. And I think that's what the Wizards ultimately wanted to do with him, but they never really got to that point. So if the Bulls can unlock that and you know, have him at that spot but still utilize his passing, I think that would probably be for the best. But, you know, the expansion of his shooting and the ways he can shoot, you know, if he can shoot off the dribble with both hands, I think that'll be a good development for him as far as playing at that spot off the ball.
So what other NBA player would you say compares, you know, most accurately to Tomas Satoransky's game? You know, we fully expect him to be a, you know, fit really well next to Zach LaVine in this lineup. You know, Otto Porter, you know, someone who he played with is also going to be, you know, on the wing with him as well. So there should be like a good balance of usage between these three perimeter players. But Like, what NBA player, what other NBA player right now would you say compares best to what Bulls fans can expect from Tomas Satoransky at point guard and his overall impact on the game?
I think Sean Livingston's a pretty good comparison. You know, just even though Livingston can get up there and Satoransky can definitely get up there and play above the rim, most of the time it's just solid basketball. Tall point guard, not necessarily the quickest guy on the court, the fastest guy on the court, but clearly thinks through the game, really good passer, good rebounder, solid defensive player, just the type of guy who, you know, makes winning plays that you want on your team. And I think the type of player that, you know, might not score 20 and 10, but, you know, when you look at the box score after the game, you realize that he did a lot of other things. And when you watch the game, you can kind of understand how he thinks through it and how he makes his teammates better by, you know, moving without the ball and creating space and by directing the players he's defending into traffic on defense. So I think he's just a good glue, smart glue guy who, you know, has definitely improved his game over the years. And I think, you know, there's a good likelihood that he'll continue to improve in Chicago because of the trajectory he's been on and for because of how hard he works and how much he definitely kind of cares about his craft.
You know, one of the things we're going into our third season of the rebuild as a young team. What are your thoughts on the Bulls as far as what you've seen from them the last couple of seasons? And what are your thoughts on some of the moves they've made in this offseason as far as the adding to the young nucleus, including a guy like Tomas Satoransky?
Yeah, I've really liked what the Bulls are doing. You know, I think there's some really good young teams in the Eastern Conference. I think Atlanta is getting a lot of hype right now, but Chicago, I think, has done just as good of a job, if not better, at accruing young talent. You know, the Markkanen pick I thought was really good. I think he's a future perennial all-star. Wendell Carter Jr., I think, has a lot of promise. And I think Otto has found really a perfect situation for him. You know, this wasn't a great spot for him in Washington because, you know, they had become an overpriced team. And I think everyone looked at his contract as, you know, not maybe being worth the production. But when you put him on a team with a bunch of young players who haven't been paid yet, it's really a perfect spot for him. And, you know, all he has to do is stretch the floor and play with guys who can shoot. But obviously, you know, it was surprising from the outside looking in this offseason when it seemed like maybe the Bulls would go for a veteran point guard. And technically they did with Tomas Satoransky, but, you know, they, of course, drafted Coby White. I liked Coby White a lot. I know the Wizards liked him a lot. I think he's going to be definitely a very good scorer at the next level. So I'm excited to see how it all comes together. You know, it's tough to win in the NBA with a young team, but I think it's all about, you know, Markkanen and Carter and whether one of those guys or some collection of them can, you know, really emerge as all NBA type players. And, you know, then I'm sure you're gonna have to supplement it even more with veterans to kind of hold it all together. But right now, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls, you know, if a year from now we're talking about the Bulls, you know, at least getting to the first round of the playoffs, because I think they have the talent to be one of those lower seeds, I would say, in the Eastern Conference.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned Otto Porter, and he has been a big part of, you know, the optimism about this team because of, you know, what he's, you know, done on both sides of the ball, being able to knock down shots and being able to guard multiple positions. So we'll wrap up on this question. Were you surprised at all by the Otto Porter trade that happened earlier this year in, I believe, February? I mean, the Bulls got him for Bobby Portis, Jabari Parker, which, you know, relatively speaking, was just expiring contracts, and then a 2023 second round pick. So, you know, as you mentioned, the motive seemed to be kind of just like luxury tax savings rather than really getting actual player value. But were you surprised that the Wizards didn't, you know, really get much of, you know, any basketball value for Otto Porter Jr.?
Yeah, I think it was real mismanagement of their assets. You know, at the time they had this goal of making the playoffs. They had a GM who, you know, apparently could have saved his job if they made the playoffs. So they were making win now moves. You know, they liked Bobby Portis in the draft a lot, so it wasn't surprising that they traded for him. But, you know, to give up on a guy who you picked third overall and gave a max contract to and not get anything really besides the second round pick beyond this year was definitely surprising and not the way anyone would want to do it in an ideal situation. you know, ideally you'd get some sort of future assets for him. And they ended up letting those guys walk. So I think it greatly changes the way that you view that trade. And, though getting financial flexibility was important, you know, I think ideally you would have also gotten something back. Otto Porter, you know, as much as he became a controversial player in DC because of the contract, that always happens, you know, he had basketball value and the Wizards didn't get a whole lot back from it, which absolutely was surprising. And, you know, I think the Wizards are in a better spot now financially, and they had to do something. Obviously, the John Wall injury with his contract was basically, you know, an unprecedented situation. But I think there's a lot of Wizards fans out there who wish that you know, that at least they got something beyond that second round pick.
You know, really quick on the while we're on this topic of Otto Porter Jr., last season when after the trade, you know, something I noticed, all Bulls fans noticed something really different about him was he was a lot more vocal, not only on the court, but in the locker room too. And he was a lot more aggressive with his offensive game. And that was one of his biggest criticisms with Washington Wizards. And I remember a lot of times Bradley Beal, reading an article about Bradley Beal, would be like, I had to yell at him to shoot the ball. I remember a couple of years back when Paul Pierce was on the team, he mentioned how Otto Porter Jr. doesn't know how good he is, things like that. Can you envision him staying aggressive and being more of a leader? Since he's on a new team now, or do you think that maybe was kind of like a honeymoon period and you would see him going back down to kind of being that nonchalant, passive player?
I think on the face of it, I would say, yeah, he can continue to be that way because I think the fresh start, just in terms of the locker room was important for him. You know, he was in the Wizards locker room as the third piece, you know, not only as the third best player, but also the guy who was picked third. So he's the youngest guy, right? Although Beal is technically the same age, you know, he has more NBA experience. So it was like John Wall and Bradley Beal's locker room, and Otto Porter was clearly the number third guy. And, you know, John Wall's a very dominant personality. Bradley Beal is a very, very good player. I think ultimately it was tough probably to coexist with those two guys and kind of truly grow into who he is and his personality. So, you know, maybe being the elder statesman with the big contract in the Bulls locker room, you know, creates a different dynamic for him where he is the guy that others look up to. You know, now he's surrounded by all these young players and he can be the leader, you know, even just by leading by example because he's, you know, been through more than they have at the NBA level. So I could see that dynamic working for him. I think it was always a tough locker room for him to kind of have his voice heard because in particular, John Wall is such a dominant personality and is just complete opposite type of person to Otto Porter. But maybe now that roles have changed, things can change for him.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Otto seems to have he seems a little bit more comfortable, at least vocally, in Chicago so far on the limited sample size that we have. But that's a really, really good point that, you know, sometimes just these dominant personalities don't mix with other certain types of personality. So, Chase, thank you so much for joining us and providing all of his insight on Satoransky and Porter and, you know, some of the Wizards background. Where can listeners find you on social media to, you know, follow your coverage on the NBA and the Washington Wizards?
Yeah, for sure. Just find me on Twitter at Chase Hughes, MBCS.
All right. Awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you once again for doing all this for us, man. This was really, really insightful.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much. And we greatly appreciate you coming on.
All right. So Monday, the Bulls have media day. And there should be a lot of different news coming out of Chicago. We have a lot of different storylines with this new team. We have, you know, the additions of Thaddeus Young, the additions of Tomas Satoransky, Kobe White, the draft pick, Daniel Gafford, Luke Kornet. So there's going to be a lot of new faces at media day. And, you know, we know last year it was a really good feeling about this team, right? It seemed like there was a lot of like normal. It didn't seem like there was like a lot of like, you know, craziness going on. It just had like a very normal feeling. And then we had those injuries to Denzel Valentine and Lauri Markkanen that kind of, you know, sent everything back into you know, kind of that same old Bulls feeling. So, you know, Salim, what are you expecting from media day tomorrow? Anything interesting? Are we going to get more of an insight into how the Bulls are feeling about, you know, this point guard competition? What are you expecting overall from what we're going to get in Chicago Bulls media day?
Yeah, you know, it's be interesting to see how that point guard dynamic works out. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of I feel like there'll be some good quotes from Chris Dunn on how he's feeling about going into training camp for competing for a spot in the rotation right now. That's what he's competing for. It's not necessarily only the starting point guard position, but he's probably competing to have a consistent rotation within minutes within the rotation. That'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to hear from a guy like Thaddeus Young, what he sees in this young team and other young players like Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and things like that. So that'll be I think the most interesting parts of for tomorrow, because I think a lot of the dynamics with this young team, we already understand what we need to see out of them. So those I think will be kind of the most important things to look at.
Yeah, there should be an interesting quote or two from Chris Dunn. I think that is probably the most that might be the most interesting storyline of media day. But I'm also interested to see what Jim Boylan is going to be talking about at media day, and maybe we get a little bit more insight on how this offense is going to be. Whether or not he has any changes in his approach for the upcoming season. Is he going to be a little bit more, is he going to be less pressed, I guess, so to speak? Does he feel more comfortable now that, he has this job security of being the head coach? He signed the extension. This is his opportunity now. So is he going to relax a little bit and, be able to, I guess, not really be himself, but just, be able to, coach this team with a little bit more a sustained approach, I guess, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see what Jim Boylan has to say, and media day for the most part will be it. I hope it'll be pretty normal. We said that last year, but I mean, obviously that didn't happen. But I mean, right now I don't really think there's like any like crazy storylines outside of what we've already mentioned with Chris Dunn, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You just kind of hope that he doesn't have any issues as far as concern, causes any issues within the locker room, which I don't think he will. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy. So, going into media day, last year's media day wasn't too bad. It was just training camp. First couple of days in the training camp, we already talked about, which obviously the injury to Lauri happened. So, that's what we just got to hope for, is just we have a smooth training camp and, we can just kind of see this young team healthy going into the first half of the season, and they can kind of gel together and we can see some good development.
Are you expecting any proclamations? I know, was it 8 years ago, we got the Derrick Rose, why can't I be MVP speech? Any proclamations in terms of Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, not becoming MVP, but any bold predictions in terms of them saying, they can be all-stars, whatever, lead the league in scoring? I don't know.
I think the Bulls young players, especially Zach, was going to be talking about playoffs. I don't think he's going to shy away from that. And I think he's going to talk about himself as far as taking that another leap and trying to lead this team into postseason action. I think I could see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see playoffs being a really, popular point of conversation. And, it seems like a lot of people are kind of getting on board with that idea. Like, I think fans are right to expect that right now with this team. There's going to have to be a big improvement in the win column going, I think, what is it, like they have to make like an 18 win improvement just to get to 41 or something like that. So, I mean, it seems realistic at the best case scenario in terms of, how this offseason has already gone with the pieces that we've added. So, it'll be encouraging to hear someone like Zach LaVine, who's obviously going to be a big, vocal leader for his team. Maybe even Otto Porter talking about it, Lauri Markkanen, maybe even Wendell Carter Jr. kind of gets in on that as well. So media day should be it should be a pretty good one for the Bulls. And, I'm excited to see, what a lot of these players are thinking. So, on the topic of Chris Dunn, there's been a lot of rumblings lately. I think we've had some rumblings from Casey Johnson, who's now on NBC Sports Chicago, and we've had some from Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic Chicago. And there's been a lot of rumblings that Chris Dunn has looked really good in unofficial like training camp or mini camp and some of the scrimmages that they've been doing. So, you know, there's been some skepticism that maybe, you know, that's being released to kind of like pump up trade value or whatever, whatever. And, you know, I can understand not buying it. And I thought it was interesting that Casey Johnson said that his prediction right now is that he believes that Chris Dunn is going to be the starting point guard. And, you know, that kind of meshes with what Jim Boylan said, even though it was more, it could have been seen more as lip service when he said that Chris Dunn is still the starting point guard of the Wolves. So, Salim, are you buying any of this with Chris Dunn, like, heading into media day, heading into training camp? Like, is there smoke here, or is this just a lot of nothing about, you know, what he's been doing in the offseason?
I don't know. I always take, ever since that whole Derrick Rose stuff happened where, you know, Derrick Rose dominating practice, he's, you know, workouts, he looks like a superstar again. Ever since that, you know, I've been very, take everything like with these off-season things, fluff things with a grain of salt. I'll see what happens once the season get, I mean, once training camp and preseason gets going. Because unless Chris Dunn has completely revamped his game, I don't see a lot of difference with him. Is he going to all of a sudden be a guy that really is able to play off the ball? Because that's going to be the biggest thing with Chris. It's not going to be his what he does as a point guard and isolation and things like that. I mean, not that he was great at isolation and kind of, you know, being a guy that can kind of, you know, do things on his own. He was okay at it. He wasn't like by any means like, you know, wow, that we need to get Chris on the ball on one-on-one and things like that. But like I said, you know, he's going to have to completely revamp his game. And the way he fit with Zach LaVine was really the big concern. So, yeah, I'm going to have to see him, you know, especially with his shooting, become a better three-point shooter. And especially when he's not, you know, handling the ball as well. Maybe if he does things, some off-ball movements, getting cuts to the basket and things like that. So, yeah, unless, like I said, unless he completely has revamped his game, you don't know how much difference you expect.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just hard to imagine if he comes back the pretty much the same player. I just don't really see it. You know, I guess he can play he can get a spot in a rotation given that there's, you know, concerns about, you know, the Bulls wing depth right now and, you know, with Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchinson, but I don't know. I just don't see it. It's hard for me to get behind this right now. And, you know, I'm not of the mindset, and, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but I'm not of the mindset that, you know, we need to play Chris Dunn to pump up his trade value. You know, I just don't see that as really important. You know, I'd rather cut losses, you know, accept what we can get and just move on. And it seems like the Bulls adopted that same mentality. They just were not able to get anything for him. Like, I think they were trying to get Justin Holiday for him at one point, and that didn't even materialize. So, you know, I guess it's positive that Dunn is having some encouraging rumblings from, you know, two different sources from Darnell Mayberry's side and Casey Johnson's side. I just have a hard time buying that it's going to actually come to fruition on the basketball court when the regular season actually starts. Because right now I'm of the mindset that Tomas Satoransky is the Bulls starting point guard, and it's not, like, for me, it's just not even particularly close. Like, I'm more excited about seeing that lineup with Satoransky, LaVine, Porter, Markkanen, and Carter, seeing that lineup play a lot of minutes and seeing if that lineup is really going to mesh as well, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I'm thinking the same way. In my mind, Tomas Satoransky is going to be the starting point guard. The only way I can see the Bulls getting value for him is a similar trade to like how we traded Bobby Portis. But the problem then becomes is the contract. What contracts are we going to trade to, you know, land that player? I just don't see them being able to trade him for even if they just did like a contract dump to get a second round pick. It's hard for me to see that, even because the team that takes him, remember, are going to have to consider extending him to another contract because he's going to be a restricted free agent. So obviously the Wizards were comfortable with, for whatever reason, you know, to trade Otto Porter, obviously, but they had, you know, cap issues on their own. So that's what their biggest concern was, to get that Jabari Parker deal, that it was an expiration essentially to cut off spending on their payroll. So Yeah, it's going to be something like that. Only way I can see a Chris Dunn trade happening is if, you know, you see a trade, a bigger trade, not just him, something bigger on the Bulls being sent out and the Bulls getting back a player that, you know, upgrades their roster. But otherwise, I don't – it's hard for me to see it. Like, it's hard for me to see a trade happen with Chris Dunn and how much value you're really going to get out of him in a trade, in the trade market.
Yeah, it's – pending restricted free agents who have not really panned out, it doesn't seem like they have much value in the market, as you noted. And, you know, the other tricky part is that, you know, since he is a pending free agent, making, even if he does play well, you're going to have to extend a qualifying offer to him. And his qualifying offer is not cheap. So it's a lot of money just to, you know, even have that right of first refusal, you know? So I can't see a team doing that even if he does play well. So it's just a situation where it just does not seem like you can get anything, you know, any sort of promising, you know, value for him. Now, you know, maybe something happens where there's an injury or whatever to another team and, you know, Chris Dunn becomes a priority. That, I mean, that would be nice. But outside of that, yeah, I just don't really see it. You know, I hope that he plays well because, I mean, hey, if he plays well, then, you know, that makes his team deeper and, you know, obviously improvement for him is, you know, great for the team and himself. But it's, you know, looking back at the last few seasons when he's had that opportunity and when he has played in lineups with Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, it just does not seem like it's going to work out. But we'll see what happens with Chris Dunn, and, you know, we'll see if any of his stuff actually materializes when, you know, training camp begins and when the regular season begins. So that's a wrap for Bulls Bulls Gold episode 55. Salim, do you have anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, you know, just excited for training camp to start, you know, just to see how everything, you know, transpires with this team. I'm hoping, you know, we can stay healthy. Like, that's like the biggest concern for me going into the season is health. And hopefully, obviously, the second concern is Jim Boylan, but, you know, that kind of got a little bit mitigated because of the coaching additions. But we're hopefully his meatballness doesn't get too crazy, you know, like he doesn't go too off the cuff and say some things that you could be an issue with the locker room, especially because Zach LaVine seems like a very a player that's I wouldn't say like too sensitive. But he doesn't appreciate sometimes, you know, those backhand, like those comments that, you know, coaches can make that, you know, are too negative unnecessarily and things like that. So that'll be interesting as far as the dynamic. But yeah, I'm just, biggest thing I'm concerned of is with health, and I'm hoping this team can stay healthy.
You know, I'll never forget that. I don't know if you saw it, but it was that image of Zach LaVine in the locker room after they lost to the Celtics when, you know, they got pulled or whatever in the first quarter and they didn't play again. Do you remember that picture where Zach LaVine was just like staring at the camera, just, and you could feel how mad he was at Jim Boylan.
Like, yeah, he was super pissed off, and he, like, you know, he stayed pretty politically, you know, correct as far as the things he said. He wasn't too, but he knew he wanted to just be like, you know, screw this guy and blah, 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 and all that, you know, just kind of go off and, you know, let off some steam. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, as the season went on, you saw their relationship get a lot better. So, you know, we'll see what happens next season. You know, just as quick as that relationship got well, it could get ruined again if it, you know, certain things don't, you know, go the right way.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be interesting to see the dynamic Boylan has with the players. It seems like they got, you know, it seems like they got along better as the season went on, and, you know, that whole Celtics incident and then the stuff with the leadership committee, whatever, it seemed like maybe that stuff was kind of a thing in the past. But yeah, it's just good. It's good to have a lot more NBA news trickling in. I mean, we saw the stuff with, you know, some teams' media days. I think Houston did their media day. Brooklyn did theirs. And, you know, that was interesting stuff with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know, talking about his injury and things like that. So it's just good to have, you know, the NBA, you know, back. We're heading into October, so we got media day, we got training camp, preseason is around the corner, and then, you know, towards the end of the month we'll be at the regular season opener, and, you know, we'll be on the 23rd, so everything is starting to trickle in. And yeah, it's just exciting to have basketball back.
Yeah, definitely. Just hopefully things are, this season should be exciting, I think, in general. So yeah, it's exciting. Exciting to have it all back.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is the end of Bulls Gold episode 55. Please check us out on Twitter at Bulls Gold. Again, please listen to any previous episodes that we've done. We have some really good guests this offseason. Very insightful information about some of the players on the team and just talking about the offseason in general. So yeah, check out some of the previous episodes that we have done. But for Salim Sudawala, I'm Edward Schuler. This has been episode 55 of Bulls Gold, and we will catch you next week, Bulls fans. Like a freshman.